Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on our Healing Through Hope, Through Hurt Tour Talk. Tonight is a special night for us. It's a night for you to be introduced to the host of the show, as well as, of course, callers always welcome to call in. I'm your host, Maria Wall, and I'm also here with my co-host, Ms. Autumn Coleman, and we'd like to welcome you tonight. Your call-in number, if you'd like to call in, our number is 646-478-4726. This is our debut show. We will be here every Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, and we look forward to working together to heal through the hurts in our lives. Autumn, how are you tonight?
I'm doing good, just relaxing and just kicking my feet up and just, you know, just waiting and expecting, hoping that we have a good show like we had yesterday. And, you know, I'm just excited and looking forward to what's going to happen. So, well, I guess you can start off with introducing yourself, Maria, and telling people a little bit about yourself. And I'll just go right after you. Hello? Maria? Hello?
Hello?
Maria?
Yeah.
Hey.
I'm here.
Did you hear me talking?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. I didn't know because you didn't say anything.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I told you that I had to go. I bought in a caller.
Oh, okay. All right. So
hello?
Who's on the phone?
It's Autumn. No, it's Autumn. It's Rebecca. Autumn, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you doing, Rebecca?
I'm doing very well. How's the East Coast?
Still a lot of snow. A whole bunch
of snow.
Snow.
I rarely come outside, so I really don't know.
Yeah, it's a lot of snow. It's almost to the point of being depressing. I mean, you know, I know that it's God's work and all of that, but you know, can we heal this particular hurt? Because it's a lot. So I don't know.
I know out here in Waldorf. Yeah, I know out here in Waldorf. Everywhere you drive, you just see mountains of snow. Probably like, I don't know how many feet high.
Right.
Probably like 10, 11 feet high.
I just
came back from the store, and you can't even see, you know, in the intersection because there's big old boulders of snow. And then it's supposed to snow next week, so.
I hope not, because this is more than enough for me. And, wow, you know. But we're going to get the show started. Again, I'd like to welcome all of our guests, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time this evening, we'd like to thank you for listening in and chiming in. I am your host, Maria Wall, and I'm here with my fellow co-host, Ms. Autumn Coleman, and if you'd like to call in, our call-in number is 646-478-4726. We are here every Saturday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. The premise for our show is Healing Through Hurt. We will be going on tour later on this spring, and, of course, you can get all that information here and, of course, on the Foundation website. Tonight we're going to really be introducing ourselves to you, and of course, our listeners are welcome to call in and introduce yourselves. And I know tonight we have a special treat because Rebecca will be reciting a few of her poems. Is that correct? So
that is correct.
Great. We are going to get the show started, and I'm going to turn over the mic to Autumn so that she can tell you or introduce herself to you and tell you a little bit about herself. So Autumn Coleman, ladies and gentlemen, this is my co-host, Ms. Autumn Coleman.
Hello. Well, just a little bit about me. I'm 28 years old and originally from Portland, Oregon. Moved to Virginia in 2001 and, you know, started my life just right out of high school. I took a year at a seminary college and moved to Virginia with my mother. She had been here a year prior. My story is pretty much a typical story of just a whole bunch of relationships gone bad. I had a lot of trauma happen to me when I was a child. Some things I don't even remember. For instance, someone said that they molested me, and I don't remember, but I take it as, one of those things that children block out. But I do remember being raped, and I do remember, just different types of abuse, sexual abuse, mental abuse, not only from, strangers, but also from family members, and particularly a lot of mental abuse from my mother. And she had me young, and I just came to the conclusion, a revelation after fasting and praying that what I had been dealing with all my life, ever since I was a child, which started in the womb, was the spirit of rejection. And that has followed me throughout my life in many occasions. After getting into a relationship with God and just understanding human nature and, understanding how, things are transferred and, there's so many, people talk about generational curses and genetic type of how things pass on through your genes. Well, I was given the spirit of rejection, and it started when my mother she got pregnant at 14, had me at 15, and of course my father was young. He was about a year older than her, and she, hid her pregnancy family for about 6 months. My mom was really petite, and no one really paid attention to her weight gain. She had just started a new school, so I believe that, no one really paid attention. But she hid her pregnancy for a very long time. And, just think about, hiding a pregnancy and not the father not being around, you being scared to talk to anyone about it, wishing that it wasn't so, wishing, that it would go away. Lord knows what she tried to do, but all of that wishing and hoping and hiding and ignoring and trying to, cover up was rejection, was her rejecting me. And also the fact that my father didn't want me, that was rejection as well. So I grew up, it started in a womb, and when I gave birth, it gave birth, and that's when it started chasing me throughout my life. I always knew that, there was something different between me and between my relationship with my mother, because I always felt she treated me differently. That, it was something about our relationship that just wasn't quite right. And, I was being rejected. I was, having I was feeling that what I was doing was wrong. And, it's just normal stuff that a child does. But, you know, she'll get mad at me and, you know, tell me that she doesn't want me, tell me that she hates me, and, you know, all these different types of stuff. You know, I found out I was going to get adopted, and you know, it was just constant rejection, rejection. So as I got older, rejection turns into, after it's just constantly pressed into your life, it turns into depression. It turns into you feeling less than, you feeling like you're not worthy. You're feeling like there's something wrong with you. And all the while, there isn't anything wrong with you. But that carried on, and that spirit carried on into my relationship with men. And that's when the story of just constant turmoil began. You know, that's when I developed major depression, where I developed self-hatred and low self-esteem, and you know, even got to the point where, you know, I tried to commit suicide a couple times, and, you know, throughout my adulthood, and all because of this, all because of me feeling less than, me being rejected by men, me being rejected by my family. And it took a toll on my life. It followed me all the way through my adulthood. And although I was a good student, and I was very, you know, ambitious and very articulate and very, you know, good academically, because, you know, I was raised by my grandmother, who was a phenomenal woman, and but she couldn't give me the love her love that she gave me just never was quite enough. You know, I never believed that she loved me completely. I never believed that anyone could love me, and it was because of this rejection that I felt from in the womb. And so my relationship with men became relationships of being used, being the naive one, being gullible, falling for whatever a man says, and just being someone's playmate and being someone's, you know, sex, you know, whatever it was. You know, I was that. I would conform into, because I wanted to feel accepted, and I wanted to feel like, I belonged, and I did not belong to myself because I did not know me and did not love me. And I felt whatever, you know, there was no identity. The little bit of identity that I had was taken from me. I was an artist. And I am an artist. I loved art when I was young. Went to art school from elementary school to my junior year in high school, because it was a passion. It was a gift of mine. I wrote poetry. I there's a lot of things that made me. But every time I got into a relationship with a man, he would take something from me and take pieces of me, and taking those pieces of me caused me to not identify myself, not know who I was, and let me try to, you know, I sought validation in other people. I sought validation in men. You know, whatever it is that they said they wanted in a woman, I would conform to be, and which was not the thing that attracted them to me in the first place. It's a process. I remember just watching Chris Rock, and said when you meet people, you meet their representative first, and then once you are with them, you really determine, you know who that person was. Well, I feel that the representative that people was meeting was me. And once they got to know me, they disliked something of me, I would change to be whatever it is that they wanted me to be. So throughout my life, I just had, you know, I got pregnant a couple of times, a few times, and, you know, was in a situation where the father did not want to be there, and I didn't want to be a single mother, so I got an abortion. And the first time that I did get an abortion, my mother took me, and she didn't ask me a question. She didn't tell me, you know, well, this is what's going to happen, and she did not tell me how I was going to feel afterwards. She just did not want me having a child at a young age. And so as I got older, you know, I never really understood, you know, what I did. So, you know, not caring about myself, I got pregnant a few more times and used abortions as a form of birth control. And that really took a toll out on me. It made me feel like it was the norm, all these abnormal things that was going on in my life, I adapted to the rejection, the low self-esteem, the depression, the abortions, everything that was not healthy, I adapted to. But, you know, no one could take my intellect. No one could take my ambition. I always was an optimistic person. I always was compassionate. I always wanted to, you know, I always wanted to help someone, and you know, whatever it is that I had, I would give, you know. And, you know, it just happens to be that when I was in a relationship with men, I would give too much of myself and give all the wrong things, you know, to my friends. I would give, you know, out of the kindness of my heart. And, you know, thank God I did not get friends that took advantage of me a lot. I didn't have a lot of them. But my turmoil starts with men. And, you know, I call it you know, the master manipulator, because that's what they are to me. Whenever I would fall in love with a man, I would give my whole being to them, and I expected for them to do the same to me. You know, I would take what people's word for face value, and when it was just, I was a trusting person, or you can call me naive, but I was on a constant, there's something rattling. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was on a constant search for love, and when I got to that point where I felt that this person loved me, that they were saying all the right things, I said, okay, well, this is the one. And that one was just, they were my one, but I was there 3, 4, 5, and 6, and it wasn't the same, so I had to deal with that. And that caused me even more rejection. So I would say that I had a boyfriend once every year and a half. You know, ever since I started dating, I would have these long relationships. I never got a chance to date, and never got to, you know, test the waters to see if I like this person or not. It was whoever, you know, showed interest in me, I liked, and I showed interest back to them. Whoever showed interest in me, I was interested. You know, my last relationship, I went in, well, the one before that, I was dating this older man. I believe I was 22, and he was 43. And I was out here in Virginia. I've had so many, I have so many bad relationships. I mean, I can just pick one, but I'm going to start with him just to let you know what I was dealing with. I was dealing with a 43-year-old man who was a minister at a church that I attended. And
wow.
I had just moved out of my mother's home and was looking to move into my own place. Well, this man befriended me, and I would go to him and talk to him about, you know, what about God, because I knew that, you know, I got saved at a young age and just always was seeking and looking for God. So I went and I spoke to this man, talked to him about my issues, talked to him, you know, about what was going on in my life. And, you know, he just so happened to have a 6-bedroom home and just happened to start renting out the bottom of his home when he found out I was looking to move closer to my job. So his downstairs just conveniently became available. And never hit on me as far as, you know, tried to pursue me, but it was just strictly, you know, I'm helping you out, I'm a minister, and you can trust me. So I believe I'm 20, either 21 or 22. So I move in with this man, and he, you know, this is just a transition for me to get into the area and get familiar because that's where my job is. And I noticed by living there that he smoked cigars. So he smoked cigars, and I really didn't, you know, I thought it was odd because, you know, my vision and what I see in men, I mean, in ministers or people of God is they are, you know, basically holier than thou. They do no wrong. And he's sitting on the pulpit every Sunday, and, you know, he's smoking a cigar. So I put that aside. And then I noticed that he had liquor in his cabinet, and particularly Remy Martin, top shelf, and noticed that there were several empty bottles in his home. And I assumed that they were someone else or someone else's because I just would never, I assumed that it was a party or something. You know, I spent a lot of time downstairs or working overtime. So I found out that he drank. So that was a shocker to me. The next thing I noticed was he brought a woman into his home, which, you know, was not a problem for me. You know, this is, you know, that's his girlfriend. Men are allowed to date. So he brought this woman to his home, and I came home one day and saw them on the couch, and she was fondling him, and I did not know what to think at that time. I knew what to think at that time, but I was very shocked because they were having sex, obviously. And this is a man of God. This is somebody that I look at on the pulpit, you know, on Sunday. And, you know, he introduced me to her, and I said hello and, you know, went our separate ways. Well, she was from out of town. And she left. Well, when she left, I was going to school one day, and he told me that when he got back, that he had a surprise for me, and that he, you know, I already told him about my relationships with men. I had just got out of a relationship with another man that I lasted for about a year and a half. That was traumatic. He, you know, did a lot of stuff to me. But I had already went through something. So, but this man knew everything. He knew all of my weaknesses. He knew all of, you know, my hurts, my pains. He knew my triggers. He knew everything. And so the surprise was, I'm going to show you love. I'm going to, you know, give you the love that you have been looking for. His favorite line was, I apologize to you for everything any man has ever done to you. And I thought that that was so sincere that, you know, that for a moment it took away all of the pain that I felt in my life, because someone actually cared that it wasn't just that it was all these things that happened to me and apologized for them, because I never received an apology. And so when I got home from school, he had cooked a nice meal and had candles and had some nice music playing, and he told me to sit down and we ate, and he told me that he said he wanted to make love to me. And I said, you want to make love to me? And still, I'm looking at this man thinking, well, he smokes cigarettes, he smokes cigars, he drinks, and he has sex. But I'm still looking, I'm still trying to get that in my mind and to wrap my mind around it, because there has to be an explanation, because this is a man of God. And you know how all the women are in church, they look at these ministers and desire to be with them because of their spirituality. So I'm looking at this man and I'm thinking these things, but I'm also thinking that, well, he wants to be with me now. So I said, okay, you know, I want you to make love to me. I want you to show me what love is. So he takes me upstairs and takes off my clothes, and he gives me a bath and takes me out the bathtub and wipes me down and dries me off and puts oil on me and all this different stuff. And then he gets up and walks away. And I say, I'm thinking that we are going to make love, have sex. But he said, no, I just made love to you. You don't have to have sex to make love. And I said, okay, but I'm laying on the bed naked. So eventually I was confused, and that made me want him even more. And so eventually we ended up having sex that night. And I think at that point I think that he had me where he needed me to be. And as I got into a relationship with him, you know, I would go to church. And I didn't move out of his house anytime soon. I ended up staying there. And, you know, I had got a job working as an accountant, and he convinced me to stop working, and that he wanted to take care of me. And he paid for my college tuition, and he, you know, paid my bills, and he did all these things that a man is supposed to do. But he's sleeping, I'm sleeping with the enemy, and I'm going to church every day, I mean every Sunday, in Bible study, and this man is portraying to be this while he's sleeping with this young girl, manipulating her and, you know, telling her all these things about, you know, about the Bible, about, you know, about marriage. And I've soon found out that he was still married. You know, he was separated from his wife for 2 years. They lived in separate homes, but he was married. Then, you know, I knew he had children, and he was late. You know, he was having issues with child support, and, you know, he disliked one of his sons because he didn't want his son, and he treated his son like crap. And his daughter was from his marriage, and he still wanted his wife. But I mean, he shared a lot of things with me.
May I say something?
He got me to do. Yes.
That's as my story involves typical abuse that
that follows me throughout my lifetime, and I recognize those behaviors that you're describing from that man as grooming behaviors. He did everything to groom you, to put you where he wanted you, but he didn't really love you. It was for his own sick pleasure, because he was
right.
A broken man.
Exactly.
And that was all that he knew how to do to keep you where he wanted you. So if he had to pay
right.
your bills, if he moved you in, if he, you know, gave you a bath and, you know, then said that was making love to you, that makes my jaw drop, because that's a professional groomer. That's a professional manipulator. You know, he didn't
have a master manipulator.
Right.
And let me interject something there. Not only is he a master manipulator, but, you know, you touched on something when you said, you know, a lot of women in the church want to be with this man because he's a man of God. That's not necessarily true. A lot of these women want to be with this man because they want to go, and they will sleep with him because they want to become the first mother of the church, or the first lady, or whatever they call them, and they want to say, well, I'm on Pastor so-and-so's arm. And, you know, I think I had touched on it the other day a little bit when I had said that, you know, I'm in the middle of my own trial and tribulation with my divorce. And one of the things that my husband does is that he preys on older Christian women. So they're his target, and they fall for it. And, you know, we talk, you know, I know that all of you and I had talked earlier, and, you know, we were dealing with your situation and how you were feeling today. But in my opinion, and me watching the way that he works, I only take it but so far, because these so-called Christian women then put themselves out there to be abused and used. And it's like, okay, at some point they're putting down the Bible, like I said, and putting up their legs. And I'm like, you're too old for this. And if you're supposed to be women of God, and then you're coming after someone who may know the Bible and be able to quote the Bible and blah, blah, blah. But, again, this is now, it's becoming a two-way street. And these men are doing what these older women are allowing them to do. But in your case, you were a young child, basically, and this man was taking advantage of you, point blank. He was taking advantage. And they used to have a saying when I was younger about ministers and things. Some got called, some got sent, and some just went. And my opinion is, if you're riding around in high-end cars and living in a six-bedroom house, so the church is paying for you, so you're nothing but a con artist and an actor who gets up there and you say what you know that your audience wants to hear, not necessarily anything coming from God. And when they know, it's no different than what Tiger Woods said. He felt as though he was entitled because his money and his position gave him that sense of entitlement. The same thing happens, not every minister, so I don't want anyone calling into it, but you talk bad, because most people will hear one thing and run with it. I'm not saying that, but there is a vast majority of so-called ministers and preachers out here who are in it for all the wrong reasons. You know, they live tax-free, they're getting a big house, they drive around in high-end cars because all these people are paying for it. They can sleep with every woman in the church because 9 out of 10 of them, whether they want to admit it or not, really do secretly want to try to get with him. And it's sad, but in your case, you were a child compared to him, and he knew what he was doing. He knew that it was wrong. And even now, you're only 27, 28 years old. And, you know, theoretically, you're still very young. And theoretically, these men still know that you're a very vulnerable, impressionable young lady. And if they don't have to work very hard to get what they want, that is what they're going to do. And I say to people in your age group especially, learn how to say that it's just two letters, the N and the O, no. And then you get up and you walk away. No matter what your biological feelings may be, you know, you may want him this bad. But once you do it once or twice, it's easy to say no, bye-bye, and walk away. You know, but these men, they're just, he used you to suit his own personal agenda, and he's using his position and what he has. And he knew that one of two things was going to happen. He claimed that he made love to you and he bathed you down and put the oil on and walked away. And then he waited to see if you would take the bait. And if you didn't take the bait, he would have told you you had to move out the next morning.
Exactly.
Since you didn't, he got what he wanted. You know,
yes,
and then of course, you know, you may last a day or two, and then eventually he's still going to tell you to move out. But I'd rather him tell me, and then after that, I'd want to move out anyway, you know, because I know where it's leading to. But even then, you can walk away and say, hey, you know what? You didn't get anything out of it, you know. But you're learning. It's a learning process, and you're growing older now, and you can take all of your experiences, tie them together. And you've already acknowledged, which is the hardest part, to acknowledge that you know that you were into a vicious cycle and a pattern of self-hatred and self-neglect and abuse that allowed you to open up yourself to be abused by others. So we already know this now, so we know that you need to change that, you know, break that cycle and start all over in a different direction. And, you know, that's you know, it sickens me to hear that, but it doesn't surprise me because it's what they do. You know, it is what they do.
Exactly. Yeah, and as I got in deeper in a relationship, I found out that he was a alcoholic. He drank a fifth of Remy every single day. That I found out he had anger problems. He would get mad at me and if I said something wrong or if I did something wrong, he would tell me he wanted to leave me, and he would look at me, sit down and look at me and watch me cry and beg him not to leave me. And then after I cried to the point where I'm brown skin, where I turn red, he would say, oh, come here, I'm sorry. It was like he just wanted to see how far I would go. And what I would
exactly.
do, like I was his test, like I was his game. And I remember I ended up getting pregnant by him. And he convinced me, well, he told me that I did not want to have his child, that this just wasn't the right time, that, you know, it's not that, you know, you're so young and you don't want to do that right now. And he's already going through some things with his children and, you know, he didn't want it. And I agreed. I mean, it wasn't, again, I had abortions before. It wasn't a thing to me. But one thing that happened afterwards is that, you know, he wanted to see how far I could go. When we got back to the house, he told me about a woman who he had got pregnant and she had an abortion. And he told me that he was still, you know, you have to wait a certain amount of time before you have sex. He told me that he was feeling, you know, horny and he wanted to have sex. And so he told me that he slept with this woman after she had an abortion that same day. And he told me that it was okay. So after, I would say within 2 hours to 3 hours after I came back from getting an abortion, he had sex with me, convinced me to have sex with him while I was bleeding, while I was hurting. And it tripped my mind out because it was like this man could say anything to me and do anything to me. I remember when we had got I got so hurt and so down that I told him that I think I tried to commit suicide at the time, but he told me, and he said, well, what are you doing? I said, I just don't want to live no more. And he told me to wait, before you do that, let me get life insurance out on you. He just did not care, and I did not know. And at the time, I was going through, you know, a situation with my father, and I was looking for my father, and I was looking in him, and I was looking, when we got back from church, he said that when he gets the spirit in him, he wants to have sex, and we would have sex, and it was all of these things, you know, he had me quit my job so he can have my whole income. I would just need him. I believe that I was his experiment was a mad scientist, and he was just doing tests on me to see what could happen. And you know, thank God that it didn't get to the point where he did not pimp me. You know, he was so selfish, he wouldn't pimp me. I was his experiment, but he could have pimped me if he wanted to, because that's how he had me mentally. And I thank God because of that. But I got out of that relationship, and it took a lot. You know, he ended up putting his hands on me. He moved out of the country and bought a restaurant out of the country and was paying my bills, and he furnished my home. And when things didn't go good with whatever his business, he came back and he took everything that he bought from me. And I learned from then on to never let a man have that much control over me financially. You know, I couldn't handle the mental part, you know, because I wasn't there yet. But I always was, you know, ambitious. I always was, you know, I was very, very smart. I always had good jobs. And, you know, I just knew that I just know that I'm not going to quit my job for no man. And I know I'm not going to settle for some man taking care of me. So I never did that again. But I did get into another relationship. Now, I'm seeking God in this man, and he's looking, you know, remember, this was my counselor. This was someone I was talking to about what I was going through. So he took that from me. He took my vision of what God is, and you know, maybe this Jesus Christ that I was born, but I was raised to know is not Jesus Christ. It's not the real religion. There's several religions out there. You know, I just happened to be in school learning theology, and there's different religions. Well, maybe I have the wrong religion, or, you know, because this Jesus is not helping me. You know, I went to him for help, and look what happened. Look what I ended up with. You know, he turned my whole mind from what a minister could be, what a man could be. I feel like he did the most damage to me ever in my life. I think that he basically, I was already damaged, but he got to the point of destroying me, but he did not kill me. You know, he destroyed every part of me. So I fell into another relationship with another man, and this man was, he was very insecure. He was jealous of me because I made more money than him, because I was living in a nice place. You know, I got another job after I left the minister. After the minister left me, and this was ugly, and, you know, had a beautiful place, a beautiful house, and you know, had a you know, I had a nice car. You know, I had a Jeep, but that was my favorite car. I made good money, went to school, and ended up dating a military man, a man in the Marines. And I did not know that such thing as the Napoleon syndrome, because he was about 2 feet taller than me, and I'm 5'1", and he's not making any money, and he has debt, and he has to pay alimony, and he has child support, and he, you know, got a DUI and got demoted and was not able to get pushed up to the next rank. So this man, I meet this man, he's in my area. I actually met him online, and I was not interested in him online, but he kept on messaging me and said, well, you know, we live in the area. And I just was like, nah, I mean, okay, I'll meet you. So I met this man with the cousin, and she said, you know, Autumn, there is something about him that I do not like. And I just said, well, there's something different about him, but I don't know what it is. Well, it turns out that he was extremely, he was a drill instructor. So, you know, I went from one master manipulator to a trained manipulator, a trained man who, you know, when men are in, the people are in the military, they their whole mindset is the military. You know, that's what's first. And this man trained soldiers, you know, so he was good at at the mind game. He was good at breaking people down to build people up to the military, but he broke me down to build me up to him and to whatever it is that he wanted me to believe. And so I fell into a relationship with him. You know, he was a light-skinned black and African-American, and he would tell me that I was too dark, and that he usually dates light-skinned women, but I'm just an exception, so I was cute. So I, you know, again, I would change myself to fit whatever he wanted me to be. So I would wear lighter color makeup. He told me that I was too skinny, that he usually dates heavier women. So I gained weight. And then he would tell me that I'm getting too big, then I would lose weight. He told me that I like to wear my hair short. He told me he liked long hair. I got weave. He told me that he did not like weave, so I let my hair grow and wore hats because he didn't like my short hair. Then he told me, you know, he got to the point where he would use sex as a way to control me. He would come to my home. He would come to my home and sleep downstairs, and I sleep in the bed with me as a punishment. And I already knew that I felt that he was cheating on me, but that was his way of telling me, you know, you don't get it this time. You know, he found ways to control me. You know, I shared a lot of things with him, and he fed on those weaknesses. Then one day he introduced me to a religious cult, and they believed cult. In,
What is it called?
He introduced me into a religious cult. A cult. And,
was there a name on it?
What? Was there a name on it?
Mm-hmm.
What's the name?
Yeah.
It was called Church of Christ. Church of Christ. These people believed in there was two gods. They believed that there was a woman god, and she lived on... she lives in Korea right now. She is actually God living on Earth, God's wife. They believe that the cross is an idol. They believe they went to church on Saturdays, but they weren't Seventh-day Adventists. The men sat separate from the women, but they weren't Muslim. Women had to wear veils over their face, but they were not Muslim. And I know the veil is in the Bible, but they had all of these. They introduced you to this religion by the Sabbath day, because if you look in the Bible, I mean, if you look in the dictionary, the seventh day is actually Saturday. So they took these little known truths to introduce you to this religion. Well, I eventually got caught up into this religion. And, you know, I'm worshiping this god called Christ Aung San Ho. And the lady, the god and the woman god in Korea is named Mother Jerusalem. And your whole thing is to go and worship this god. And, you know, people believe that. There's a lot of people that are in it, but it was a religious cult to me, because when I needed... You know, when I needed guidance and stuff, they were not there. This God did not help me and get me through whatever it is that I went through. So I'm giving. Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
Uh-huh.
Hey. It's Maria. Two things. I'd like to welcome Elizabeth back. She just chimed into the show. Elizabeth from Augusta, Georgia. Is here with us, and
hi,
you know,
hey,
Elizabeth is she's on a touch and go because you said it's your grandmother.
Yeah, she's on her deathbed, but we left today. We just came back. We just got back, and I was like, oh crap, the show had 11. Oh, I gotta go at least have the 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, I actually increased it, so we had 40 minutes left, so that's the good part. I actually took it up to an hour and a half. But
I know my cousins are supposed to be coming over a little later, so when they come, I'll
stay. Okay. But, you know, Autumn, it just seems like you have, you know, you've had the misfortune of getting hooked up with a lot of false prophets, false gods, you know, who deal in false gods, who deal in false love, who tells you a lot of false truths. You know, it's just that vicious cycle again, and it's good that even now I'm hearing more than I've heard before. So, you know, we know now. I'm sure that everyone here, I know Elizabeth is just coming on, but I'm sure that Rebecca has sat here and listened, and I'm sure that she would be in agreement that, you know, we've recognized now that you seem to be drawn towards having these relationships with the same type of people over and over. So we know now, we know what the target is, and we know that that's that vicious cycle that, you know, you're going to have to break. And if that means that you may need to talk to people and say, you know what, when you start to see those red flags, there's a reason for them. And we as women, a lot of times, we tend to try to be the nurturer and be the one that makes everything right no matter what. And we tend to ignore those red flags and our gut feelings because, you know, my thing is this. Okay, my heart is meant to pump blood through my body and to sustain my life. My gut is what tells me when things just are not right. You know, my heart is busy enough. So, therefore, I tend to listen more to my gut as opposed to my heart because my heart will make, you know, it's just, if you take the heart in and we it's just our nature that we try to appease and please everyone. And when we do that, we end up on the short end of the stick many times. And I'd like to say to our listeners, especially the male listeners, if by some means you're listening, this is not a male bashing show at all. As a matter of fact, we welcome the males to call in and to give us, especially if you're someone who carries yourself like a gentleman, not a man, but a gentleman, and you understand the value of having a good woman in your corner, and you were taught to respect the relationships and the fact that love means something more than a four-letter word, we would welcome you to call in because we want to get that male perspective. We want everyone to participate. If you're here and you'd like to call in, our number is 646-478-4726. Again, this is the Healing Through Hurt Tour Talk Show. We are here every Saturday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Feel free to visit us. And again, our call-in number is 646-478-4726. We've been listening to my co-host, Autumn Coleman, and she's sharing a bit of her life story. And Autumn, you know, again, that's one of these wow factors for the show, is that you have been through so much. And, you know, I'd like to not to cut off your story right now, but I'd like to get some feedback from, say, Rebecca and see, you know, to add to what I think I've already said, because, you know, I'm here to stay, so I'll probably, we talk on a daily basis anyway. So, you know, it's good to have other people to be in your corner to help you stay on that straight and narrow because, you know, when your heart is in one place, trust me, our eyes and ears are in another. We can help to keep you on that straight and narrow and say, no, this person isn't right, you know, and then you can move on from there.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Well, welcome to feedback.
This is Rebecca speaking right now, having been Autumn's friend for almost 20 years, and that's, I'm pretty proud of that. We're only 28. We've been knowing each other since grade school. We have shared a lot of the similar abandonment issues and finding ourselves in men, and, you know, that's what broken, hurt women do. And Autumn has a strong ability to find every man that she meets. Is it a man? Is a man in a powerful position? Is a man who lives who lives one way and shows people the other way. You know, he is a man to be commended and a man to be praised, and should be a man who in that position should not be abusing his power. But somehow women, I think I found lately that when you're self-abased, when you're missing that part from yourself, to trust yourself, you tend to find those men, and those men tend to find you. And I think sometimes people come together on equal planes, like happy people find happy people, miserable people find miserable people. And
exactly.
And that's the story that plays out. And that's when you walk around and you see happy people together, it's because they're genuinely happy. And like, was it Elizabeth or Alicia last night was talking about, you know, she wouldn't recognize a good one, even if he was in her face. And when he was in her face, it was just a ghoster because she couldn't believe it. And so instead, you go back to the old one where you're more comfortable having that baseline anxiety that still needs to be fed, because that's what you experienced in the womb.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I definitely believe that, because hurt people. If someone would hurt you, they're hurt. So they're broken. You know, if you want to break somebody else, you're broken. I mean, who grows up, generally human nature, who wants to hurt someone else? Now, if that's what you do intentionally, then you're hurt.
Can I say something to that, what you just said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just like she was just saying about hurt other people, you know, a lot of people, I've been sexually assaulted more than one time, and a lot of people ask me, you know, well, don't you just want to kill him? Don't you just want to hate him? And I have that forgiveness in my heart where I have this compassion for hurting people. And so, you know, I'm like, well, obviously something happened to him to where he, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's a cycle. It comes from somewhere. Like you just said that it's not just happen to be that, oh, I just want control. So, you know, they want control for a reason, you know. They want,
mm-hmm.
you know, something out of, you know, they want to get something out of it, because it's probably happened to them most likely, or watch somebody that, or
right.
had it, you know what I'm saying. You know, so, I mean, I don't really have any grudge. I don't hold a grudge toward anybody that's taken advantage of me. I don't have any unforgiveness in my heart about that kind of thing. So, you know, I really, when people say that, you know, well, I would just want to kill him, I would have to hire somebody to kill him, I just sound so ignorant, and I understand the hurt that some people go through, but, you know, you have to learn how to forgive, especially as a Christian, even if you're not a Christian, you know, you have to learn how to have peace, forgive them, so that you can have peace with yourself, and you don't have to worry about always thinking about it. Although I still do think about it, I've forgiven them, I still do think about it sometimes, or an awful lot, but I just need to heal from that. And but I do want to say that, you know, like what I was basically saying was, there's a reason, you know, that's why we got to be careful what we say to everybody, because, like, you know, some people have a bad attitude with us, but we have to just continue to smile and be the nice, you know, and I mean, not let them take over us, but, you know, be, you know, we have to smile and be the light in their lives, so that, you know, we can, you know, if we all did that together, of course this place would be peaceful. But I'm just saying, you know, when people do you wrong, you have to turn the other cheek and do them right, because you never know what they're going through. That could be their last day on earth. If you rub them the wrong way, they might want to commit suicide, you know. So I always look at it that way. So just be careful.
Yeah. Well, let me backtrack a moment and say one thing that I keep hearing over and over again is the fact that maybe, ladies, now I'm going to throw this out here, is that do we find ourselves looking for someone to complete us instead of someone to enhance our existence? Because a lot of times we get into these very toxic relationships when we look for someone to complete us. And that's where I think we need to understand who we are and love ourselves for ourselves first, so that we can bring someone into our lives to enhance our lives, not complete us, because we're complete. We have all of our extremities. We have a right frame of mind. We go to work every day. We sustain ourselves. We're complete. We need someone that can enhance what we already have. And that's not saying that that's the problem, you know, the problem solved, because we don't need anyone to complete us, because sometimes, you know, like my situation, it wasn't someone to complete me, because when I met my husband, I was a total package all by myself. So you have to understand that. You have to decide that, you know, that you want someone to enhance you, more or less, as opposed to completing you.
I think a lot of women are codependent. I know that I was. And, you know, I think that, you know, we're doing a disservice to us, to them as well. Like, you know, I mean, I went through, that relationship took me to the extreme. You know, I went through a lot of stuff, but what I learned from it was, you know, I had to stop being the victim, and I had to say, well, yes, this person hurt me, but I allowed him to hurt me. So there was something that was in me to allow him to do this to me, and I guess it takes the time where, you know, you got to hit rock bottom where, so you can see, well, this is the problem. You know, this is the problem. You know, this is the cycle. This is how it happens. And, you know, you have to recognize it and acknowledge it. And that's just the beginning. You know, after you acknowledge it, after you see what it is, you got to accept that, you know, this is what happened to you. And you got to accept that you didn't love yourself, so you allowed this to happen. So then that's when condemnation comes in, when you start beating up on yourself. You know, it's a vicious cycle, the healing process. And you know, what do they say? There's 6 steps to healing. Well, 6 or 7 or something like that. But I mean, you're going through these cycles, and I'm still going through the healing process. I recognize where my hurt comes from. I recognize why I'm hurt. I know where the root came from. I know how I've been hurt, and yet I still feel, you know, I'm trying to do what I can to get over what it is, to get to the healing process, to be healed, but I'm still hurt, and I still feel insecure sometimes. You know, my relationship with that guy, the Marine and the Colt and stuff, took me to the point where, you know, I had no mind. I like literally lost my mind. You know, he tried to kill me and forced me to have a relationship. He beat up on me. You know, he hit me in my face and choked me. And I remember I had got to the point where I used to just let him hit me, because that was the only time that he showed affection to me, is when he hit me or when he said something to me. And it was sad, because he used his you know, the other guy did stuff to, you know, he did stuff to me. Everybody had their little tactics. Everybody had their little tactics, but he used evilness, you know, being mean to control me, you know, depriving me from himself, because it wasn't nothing that I needed from him. Physically, financially, it was him. I wanted him to make me feel like I was loved, to make me feel like I'm worthy to be loved, and he knew that. And so, you know, when he, you know, told me that when I had got pregnant, he said, you know, I don't want you to have this child. And you know, I said, okay, well, I don't, you know, I'm not going to have it. I'm not going to have it, because I don't want to do this by myself. And he said he's going to help me. And so something was telling me, you know, Autumn, you can't keep on doing this. You can't keep on using this as a form of birth control, because I don't know, at the time it was probably like 6 at the time. And so when I went in there, I had, when I went in to get that done, it felt like my soul was coming out of me. you know, and it just so happened that before I got pregnant, before, you know, before me and this guy broke up, well, after we broke up, because we got back together twice, after we broke up, the first time, I actually met my children's father that I'm pregnant right now with twins. I met him at that time, and when I met him, you know, he was this nice, sweet guy, but he was really overbearing. You know, he wanted me to move in with him the first week that I met him, and he just said he was in love with me and wanted to marry me and wanted me to have his children and meet his friends and meet his mom. And, you know, just, you know, he was this guy who had, you know, everything together, making good money, you know, single, didn't have any kids, living on his own, owned his own home. And, you know, just this black guy that all these women are supposed to be looking for. But something was different with him, because he scared me to the point where, why is he wanting me like this? You know, not that it was too fast. You know what I'm saying? It was too fast. In a week, you just fell in love with me in a week, and you want me to be with you in a week? You know, that's different. You know, it was more than just, it was more than, Rebecca, you was talking about how if a man treats you good, you know, you don't recognize it because you're not used to it. But it was on a different level than that. It was too much like he needed me. You know what I mean? Like he, like, pushed himself on me. And I thought that scared me. You know, I told him I was just got out of that relationship and all this stuff. I'm still dealing with all the drama that I went with him. But this guy is, you know, wanting to basically give me what my ex didn't give me. But this was, like, in a short period of time. So that really scared me. And when I went, I kind of fell into it, and, you know, we dated. You know, I ended up going to his home, and, you know, he was this nice guy. But I always felt like, you know, something is wrong. Like, if I give in, this, you know, if I give in to him, you know, I had lost my job at the time. If I give in to him, it's going to be another scenario of the minister, him taking care of me and then him kicking me out. Or this is going to be, or what if he turns out to be somebody who beats their women? Or, you know, what if he tries to kill me? Or, you know, what if this is the real thing, and but I'm not worthy? You know, it was so much stuff that I did. He never raised his voice at me. He was always kind and considerate, but it was just too much too fast. And, you know, still to this day, I don't know if it was too much too fast, because I was so broken and so used to being broke that I didn't know, you know. But I thought it was a little bit too fast. But I ended up leaving him and going back to my ex, because, you know, I was empty, and I can't be with this man who is telling me nice things, who is, you know, doing sweet things for me, who is basically not taking care of me, but just, you know, making me feel like I was feeling special. But one thing he did say to me that kind of stuck with me, he said, he said, we can have the best relationship, but we have to have sex. And I knew right then and there that this was not right. So it was easy for me to leave him. But I went back to the same mess that I went back to, had the abortion. And when I got the abortion, you know, I had went through, this is the first time I had a man put his hands on me. You know, I'm already messed up because I'm believing in this cult. You know, just he's constantly taking money from me. It was just crazy. And so he leaves me at the he walks away, you know, after I'm done with the procedure. I don't get my pills. He walks away, leaves me, and just basically abandoned me right after the procedure. And that made me angry. And it's like, you know, I'm sitting up here doing all this stuff for you, and you, not only did you do all this stuff to me, but you have the nerve to leave me after this, after what happened. And my doctor said I was bleeding really, really bad, really, really bad, and that I needed to, I really needed someone to be there with me just in case, you know, I was bleeding too much. You know, just in case I bled too much and needed to go to the hospital, but he didn't care. He left. He got what he wanted. I'm not pregnant by him anymore. And when I healed, I got mad, and he asked me for some money. So I had went to his house, and something had happened. He got mad at me, and he messed up my car, and then I got upset with him, and messed up his car. But I didn't call the police on him when he did it to me. But he called the police on me, and so he called the police on me, and I ended up getting arrested, and I had to go and you know, they let me out on my own recognizance, and so I had to pay him back for the damage that I done to his car, which he did the same type of damage to my car, but I didn't say nothing. He broke some stuff inside of it on purpose, but I didn't say anything because I wouldn't. You know, he told me not to tell what he did to me, you know, and I still want to be on his good side. You know, he was talking to me. He was actually talking to me now. And so, you know, after that, he started asking me, you know, for money, or if you give me this amount of money, you know, I can drop the charges. And, you know, at that time, I didn't know about the court, you know, the court system. You know, I didn't know about, you know, how it went that, you know, once the state picks up the case, that I can drop the charges. It was out of his hands. So he was manipulating me, having me give him money for something that he cannot do. Well, I eventually, during that time, I went back to my child's father, the one that I left, and he was still around. And I started talking to him at that time, but, you know, it never was the same, you know, between him and I. You know, he always had a block. It was a block between us, although we were still together, you know, or, you know, we were messing around at that time, because I can't say that we really actually we were actually a couple, because he was dating other people. But, you know, he was there. He went through all the, you know, he was there with me. He went through all the court case. The last thing that I remember, I was going to my court case for the destruction of property to his car. And he had asked, and the day before, I had his girlfriend and I were talking on the phone, arguing. And, you know, I was, you know, we were arguing back and forth. This is my ex, this is a Marine. And she was like, well, you know where I live and all that stuff. I'm like, well, I don't know where you live and all this stuff. You know, he's asking me for money. And I'm just feeling like, you know, what am I doing? Why am I dealing with this man? He has a woman, and, you know, he's did all this stuff to me. He's put his hands on me, and, you know, it was crazy. So I ended up leaving and going to my court hearing, which was just for me to pay my fine. Instead of that, I went to his house because I felt like I just wanted to die. I felt like, you know, I could not go on anymore. I felt like, you know, all this stuff is happening. You know, for some reason, I wanted to keep the child that I had, not because of him, but just because I wanted someone to love me at that time. I needed love, and he made me do this. He made me give it up, and so I started thinking about all these different things. So I went to his house and tried to get into his house because I wanted to kill myself. I wanted to kill myself. I wanted him to come home and see me laying down on his floor dead, because that's how I felt inside, dead, because he made me kill my child, and I wanted to die. And that's how I felt. And I left my boyfriend's house, you know, my child's father's house, and went to my court case, but I actually went to his house. Well, needless to say, I didn't get into the house. I wasn't able to get into the house. I was trying to, so I ended up going to my court case. and I'm talking to my lawyer. We go in there and we schedule. And then as I left, I was going back to my house. The police come and arrest me for attempted breaking and entering. The woman that he was living with had a 17-year-old daughter living with her. They were all living in the house. I mean, the woman, his girlfriend that I was talking to actually lived with him, and I didn't know that she lived with him because I moved out of the state, moved to a different state. And she was living there, and I guess her daughter saw me trying to get in the house and called the police, but I left before they got there. So I got arrested and had to go to court. I mean, I went to jail for like 8 days and had my hearing, and we were in juvenile and domestic court. And the juvenile and domestic court judge told me he was really reluctant to let me leave because he said he was more concerned that I would try to do something to myself than do something to my ex. Because I would never do anything to hurt my ex because I loved him, I thought, more than I loved him, treated him better than I treated myself. So I would never hurt him. And so, you know, all this time, all I'm thinking about is when I leave here, I'm going to kill myself. And I convinced him that I wouldn't do anything wrong. He posted bail and I left. And after that, I got home and took, like, I don't know, like 60 pills and went to sleep. Well, I woke up like 30 minutes later throwing up all the pills, and I got so angry, and I'm like, God, you know, whoever you are, I don't know what you are. Why don't you just let me die? Look at my life. It's messed up. Just let me die. Let me die. And I couldn't, and, you know, and I was so mad. And so then I found out, you know, after looking on my computer, I found out that my ex, the Marine, he was on the down low after looking through my history and my computer websites that he went to. So I had got angry because I'm like, this man put me at risk for AIDS. It's like, I'm like, am I going to die? You know, I mean, what is going on? So
could you elaborate on for the listeners on what the down low exactly is for those of us who don't know?
The down low is African American men sleeping with African American men.
Or men sleeping with men, period. It doesn't have to be African American men.
Yeah.
The down low is
but
the down low.
Yeah, he was on the down low. He was basically on the down low. Yeah, just he was sleeping with men. And so I found that out, posted an ad on Craigslist, you know, basically warning people about this man, women, or whatever. I put his telephone number on the ad, and I put his address, and then I also put his work number on there. Well, when I put his work number on there, all these different gay men started calling his job, and they had to move him out of his office. And so I could have got a federal charge for interfering with, you know, his office because he was a Marine, you know, and that was, you know, all those people, they traced it back to me, you know, the ad, but you know, it was conflicting with him doing his work. So I don't know what the charge was. It wasn't harassment because I wasn't harassing him. It was something else. But after that, that didn't come back to me for a while. So when we went to court, all of this stuff came out, all these things that I was doing, all these things that happened, you know, I would drive by his house to see if I see his girlfriend because I wanted to see what this girl looks like. Or, you know, I would send him nasty messages and stuff like that over the internet. This is when I was in Virginia. I moved from Virginia to Maryland. And when I moved to Maryland, I wasn't able to, you know, go to his home or anything like that. You know, during this time, he's still asking me for money. He even called me after I went to court, you know, when I got released from trying to break into his house. He called me twice from his girlfriend's phone, you know, probably still trying to ask me for money. And so I'm paying all these attorneys and stuff. So eventually, when we went back to court, you know, I never reported anything that he did to me because, you know, I wasn't going to get him in trouble. And
why not? But that's the thing, you know. Why not?
I wasn't going to get him because it was going to mess up his career. And no, I'm not. I loved him too much. I'm not going to get him in trouble. I never called the police. I said I was, but he convinced me not to. And I didn't have any evidence of anything that he did to me. You know, I had eyewitnesses, but I lived in where I lived, there was a lot of people in the military around. They wasn't going to tell on him. You know, had to beg my girlfriends not to tell the police because I didn't want him to get in trouble.
But in the same breath, you got yourself in trouble when you did the Craigslist thing. But then let me backtrack on you. One thing that you've said several times throughout the night, and we have about 9 minutes left in the show, and I did want to give Rebecca a chance to do at least one or two of her pieces. But the one thing that you said over and over again, and you may not realize this, but me being on the outside listening to you talk, was that these people, you needed them to make you feel you were worthy of the love. And you've said it more than once whenever we're talking. And I've been writing it down. I said, let me get these words right. But you needed them to make you feel that you were worthy of the love. And the problem with that is nobody should have to validate what you will put on this earth. We're here. Man and woman is here to be together and things like that. But these people don't love. And what they were giving you is not love. So the only thing that you were really opening up yourself to was to their manipulations and abuse. So the when you talk about making you feel worthy of the love, you first have to realize that, you know what, I'm going to love myself enough to know when to walk away. And you say that you love this man and you didn't want to mess with his job, but technically by what you did, it could have caused him a lot more harm than him just being moved from one spot. And even though they have the infamous don't ask, don't tell policy within the military, once he's tainted, he's tainted. So I'm not saying that because, you know, what he did to you was wrong, but what I'm saying is to us as women, sometimes we need to take that back seat and not take the aggressive way out, but we need to really think things out and do things in a different manner so that we don't end up on that shorter end of the stick. And sometimes, I'm saying a little bit more than kill them with kindness, but there's a time and a place for everything. And usually when we end up on that violent end, nobody ends up getting in trouble but us for whatever reason, you know. And you're not alone when you say, I loved him and I would never tell what he did to me, but he was pretty quick to tell what you did to him.
So
the love, where's the love coming from him towards you when you continuously, I loved him, so I wouldn't tell on him. Well, obviously, none of them love you because the minute that you did something, darn if they didn't come back at you. So at this point, you've gone through this and we've heard your story tonight. And I think that you're at that point now where you know it's time for you to make that conscious change that's going to come from within. And now you know you have two sets of eyeballs coming that are going to depend on you to be their guide. And, of course, you know now that you have the HTH crew or the Healing Through Hurt crew, and we're going to be here to talk it out and help you as much as we can. Elizabeth jumped offline, so I don't know if her grandmother has passed or what, but, Elizabeth, if you come back and you listen to the archive, I just want you to know that, our prayers are with you. We can really stay on this topic all night, and what I'll do is I will relinquish this right, if you don't mind, Autumn, to Rebecca to see if she wants to say one of her pieces or so. And we can actually pick this up again because you're touching on so many things that I think affect a lot of people that are also going to be listening. So I had no idea just how in-depth your story was. I mean, I knew some of it, but I'm glad that we had this portion tonight. And we have about 5 minutes left in the show. So Hello.
Yeah.
So, maybe Autumn, you know, give us a poem. Give us a poem, Becca, and we'll end the show with you. And then Autumn, you know, great session. Wow, you know, you've given us another wow moment. So we'll have something to pick up on, of course, when we come back next week, and we can really build upon that as well. So we're going to turn it over to Rebecca to give us her poetic expressions.
Well, thank you, Autumn, so much for sharing your story and giving us so much information. And even me being your friend, there's a lot of things that I didn't know that you just shared. Anyhow, so this is one of my very favorite pieces that I've written. I wrote it years ago, and I was taking a poetry class, a writing class. Long story, we'll get into it another time, my story. But this is when I realized I was starting to have physical memories of the abuse that I went through with my father. And it just so happened to be I was in this writing class, and I just really, really exploded as a writer, and even more so as an artist. And this is called, so actually the poem I wrote it to, or wrote it in response to, was by a contemporary Native American poet by the name of Joy Harjo, and I relate to her in very many ways. I have there's been cycles of women in my family that are American Indian that lost touch based on abuse. So anyhow, this is called I Give You Back. I give you back. This reminds me of the pain that I've become used to, the pain that I never deserved, the pain that has become me. I want to give it back, but I have learned to love it. I learned to feel it in my heart, in my ears, in my mouth. I know it's followed me everywhere I go, in the way of all that I do. It's darkness obstructing my light, blurring my vision, suppressing my happiness. I want to give this back to you so I can feel again, be whole for the first time. I don't want you to live in my skin or to hold me in my sleep. You constrict me. You have violated my sense of thinking. You have consumed my voice. I don't want you to tell me it's okay to have you within, because you are a liar and you will tell me anything just to fill me with your wicked emptiness. You have gutted me, but I gave you the knife only because you told me it was okay. You convinced me that this pain is nothing and I can take it. I can be cut open once more and be left wide open and vulnerable for the world to eat me away. You have forced to look at me. You have forced me to look at the world with dirty eyes. I don't have a clean vision. I will never be able to close them because I will always need to look at what you're going to do to me, what will be next in your dirty little scheme to hold me down. I want to cleanse you out of my blood, but you're too thick and sticky. You have made a permanent mark in my life that I will never forget and will always be reminded of. Even if I can give you back, I will give you back. And that's it.
Great. Thank you so much. Wow, this has been another powerful show. Autumn, sister, you know, we're here, and we're going to talk it out, and we're going to,
yeah,
you know, just continue it, you know. And you just know that you are, you know, a precious jewel on the earth, and, you know, you deserve the best. And remember, we're here for the cream of the crop, not the cream of the crap. So I want to thank our listening audience again, of course. We are here on Saturday evenings at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. We look forward to seeing you or hearing you on the radio again next week. Thank you so much, Rebecca. Great poem. I look forward to hearing some more. And we look forward to hearing some more next week. And, you know, it's been another great show. And again, to Elizabeth, our prayers go out to you and your family. For the loss of your loved one. And, you know, what more can I say? It's been a great, great show. And big hugs to you, Autumn.
So
I'm like, it's the Autumn show. You know, it's the Autumn show.
You know what? I felt like, you know, I just started just spilling and just talking about everything. You
right.
know, it just came out.
But that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
If you want to do, if you all are, of course, you're welcome to stay for our short after show tonight. But we will see you back here next Saturday at 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you all so much. We're about to go into our closing audio. And then, ladies, stay on board, and we can do our after show for a little while. And then we can say goodnight. So give us a minute. Thank you for joining us. See you back next week at 11 p.m. Eastern Time.
Goodbye.
Got him.
Yeah. Maria?
Okay. Yeah, here we go. Okay. We are back. We just ended our live airing show, and I'd like to welcome all those of you who are still here with us for our after show. Feel free, our chat room is open. You can leave your comments in the chat room, and, of course, I will bring them to our speakers for the night and our co-hosts and myself, and we'll address them there. Great show once again, Autumn. Yeah, you know, I think that you needed that. So
yeah, I did. I really did. I mean, I'm just like so much I'm going through right now. And like right. I was telling you, you know, I just said that I felt like today I had one of those deep down depressing moments where I just felt like I just wanted to end it all. It's like I'm tired of just being this man's whore. You know what I mean? I haven't slept with anyone in years except him, but, you know, the last time I seen him, all he is saying is, you know, what happened to you? It used to be fun, and I remember when you would take off your clothes, and, you know, what are you going to do when you get married to somebody, and when I see you, I want to have sex. And I'm telling him, you know, I'm talking to him about, you know, my dreams, what I'm doing and everything. But all he's talking about is you know, sex. And it's like that's all I am to him is just sex. And what is sex? Sex is a whore gets sex. You know, he tells me that his girlfriend gets everything and all I get is sex. I asked him. And it's just like, I just felt like, you know, that is all I am to him. You know, I believed all of his lies and believed all of the things that he told me, and all I am is just his whore. And he tried, and the moment I did one thing wrong, he put me in his place. He put me in my place. Like, you know, he was just waiting for me to do something wrong. I mean, you know, I asked him the last time I seen him something about, you know, can we go to, like, Five Guys and get a burger or something? And he looked at me like, what? Like, you know, I'm not even worth that. Like, you know, no, you a whore. You know, don't you get it? You know, you can't come over here unless no one's here. You know, you can't come over here, you know, when my family is here because you don't have that privilege no more. I'm tired of playing with you. I'm tired of, you know, now you know what you are. If you want to be with me, you're gonna do this on the low. You know, you're gonna do it on my terms, and my terms is now you know what you are to me. You are nothing but a whore. You know, and all I want to do is sleep with you, and that's what it always was. You know, and I believe that's what it was from the beginning when I met him. You know, when he was talking about all that, I love you and I want to marry you and all that stuff. You know, then he says, but we have to have sex. He was looking for a whore. And, you know, I believe that, you know, like Rebecca said, whatever you are, you attract. You know, he was a whore. He's a whore. And we have a lot of in him, you know, insecurities in him, because, you know, you can't, you know, game recognize game. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't, you know, strong enough to do it. You know, these are men, but he recognized my insecurities because he has the same type of insecurities, but he was a manipulator. You know, he played it differently, but that's all I am to him. And, you know, now I'm carrying his children, and he doesn't want them now. You know, he doesn't want children with me now. You know, I'm not, you know, he wants this fairy tale. You know, he wants to be married and have kids and stuff, and this is just not it. You know, he tells me that the woman he's with, he wants to be with. You know, he wants to marry. He wants to,
well, you know what?
Have children
but let me tell you right here, right now. You tell him that, you know what, that's fine and well. You can marry this woman. You can have your life. But right now, let me tell you something, my brother. You have two non-refundable tickets for the next 18 years. So I'm going to be in your life whether you like it or not. So therefore, marry her, have a wonderful life. But make sure you understand that you're coming with two more extra packages that you didn't have before. And you tell him that, and then you let him know you can run, but you can't hide. And, you know, shut him off. Cut him off at the knees, because he's doing it because he knows that he can get away with it. So, and we've already talked about this. You know, that's when you tell him, oh, okay, you want to be with her? Wish you luck. But, you know, you let her know that while she's busy having your children first and foremost, that's why I say get your babies into the system, because if something happens to him, they're going to take care of the first children first. And the bottom line is simple. Your babies have the same rights that any child that she'll bring into the world for him will have. So therefore, you get on it. You take him down. And he's an idiot. So if he thinks that his own arrogance is what's going to be his undoing. And hopefully, this woman is smart enough to know, oh, heck no, you want to marry me and talk about let's have a family and we don't have any children yet, but here you come with two right now. So, you know, it's not about, you don't have to be involved with his family, and his family doesn't do a thing for you, but you let him understand, baby, see this right here? This dictates for the next 18 years. So, you know, you may call me a whore or whatever, but I'm like, you know what, we were whoring together. You're a man whore, and then you say that I'm a whore, so therefore, out of our whoring, we got children. So therefore, we have to take care of these innocent lives that we're bringing into the world. And I would tell them, and put it in simpler terms, and tell him, have a good day, see you in court. And, you know, let him talk all the big, bad wolf crap that he wants. And that's it. A barking dog never can bite. So therefore, you know, let him talk, because all he is talk. Once again, talk is another four-letter word. Doesn't mean a thing. So, you know, talk is just what it is, talk. So you know what you have to do, and you get it done. And let him talk. That doesn't mean anything. And again, you know, what did I tell you when I said the first thing that I was going to do was the poem, Oh Little Sister, Find Your Voice Before You No Longer Have a Choice. You know, you may rise and you may fall, but without a voice, you have no choice at all. You may love and be loved, and you may feel like ugly hate, but without a voice, you allow others to dictate your fate. Oh, little sister, find your voice before you wake up one morning and discover you no longer have a choice. So now you need to find your voice. And once you find your voice, you're never going to lose it again. But right now, I'm hearing it over and over again. They are dictating to you how things are going to go. But you know what? When he decides to lie down with you and make those babies, the babies dictate both of your fate. And that fate states that it's a 50-50 thing. He needs to help you support those children. End of discussion. So all his yap, 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 you know, sitting there in the corner in the pit bull's outfit for Halloween, and we all know that he's a toy poodle, and then, you know, in the outfit, it's a woo, 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 woo. You know, come on now. Dropkick him into next year and just do what you have to do by the book, by the law. Because the law
and that's what I told him. I mean, I told him that, you know, I got to the point, you know, I'm not going to sit up here and bash him and all that stuff, because evidently that's how he was raised. You know, it's not an excuse. His father left him, but I guess that's how his mother raised him, to be that type of man, to not take care of his responsibilities. And
but
so
you know what? At a certain point, you become an adult.
It's not his fault.
But
yes,
you become an
adult. It becomes your adult. It comes your fault.
And it's his fault. Because he should know by now, it's his job to take care of those children. All that crap that he's telling you, you know, that comes, and I'm not necessarily bashing him based on what you said, though, and the facts that were presented to me, is the fact, if that is indeed the way that it went down, then he's not taking care of his responsibilities. It's as simple as that. So the only way to fix that is, okay, you have all this lip, then you talk it out in front of the judge, and you tell the judge what you're not going to do. Don't do it to you while you're pregnant and getting your stress level up. Say it to a judge. You're the big bad wolf. Go to court and say it to the judge, and we'll see what the judge says back to you. You know, what are you going to say? Well, Your Honor, we were together for a couple years, and she's a whore, in my opinion, because she went out and got herself pregnant, and I'm just an innocent bystander. You know, that's not going to fly well in a court of law, so he can forget that. So I wouldn't even waste my time even converse with him anymore. Go and let
exactly.
the court converse with him.
I was his whore. And he said, oh, you were never a whore. Well, what is it? What was I? If that's all I am, you know, when I came home, you know, I had stopped talking to him 2 months before I came home because I said, I'm not going to deal with any man. I'm just going to be, you know, I know why this stuff has happened to me. So I'm not going to deal with any man. And
uh-oh, the baby's
like,
tired.
Know,
the baby's
yeah,
tired.
And so, yeah, I said I wasn't going to deal with any men, and I stopped talking to him 2 months before I came home. He was still, you know, calling my mom, talking about, you know, where's Autumn and how's she doing? I want to see her. My mom was like, well, she doesn't, you know, leave her alone because I don't need to be involved with another man. And so I come home, and, you know, my mom leaves and goes to work, and I'm like, oh, my God, I wish she would have stayed with me. And, you know, I don't know who to talk to. So I end up calling him because he had called or whatever the other couple of days. And something told me, he said, you know, I want to see you. Where are you? He said, but I'm going to come. He said, I'm not going to be able to come till late, though. And something told me, and I think I said, well, okay. And then I called him back and said, no, you know, I don't want to come, you know, I don't want to see you late. Let's do something another day. And he was like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah. He said, I just really want to see you. But it was like God saying, no, you don't let him take you out during the day. Let him see you during the day.
Exactly.
He wants to see you. He can wait. Why does he want to come and get you at 10 o'clock at night? He just wants to sleep with you, you know, and you know, that's what ended up happening. The first day I got home, I slept with him. The first day I got home, I got pregnant, and now I know that the only reason why he was still keeping in contact with me is because he just wanted to be the first man to get some when I got home, and that's all it was, nothing else, and it was nothing but the enemy testing me again. You know, I overestimated, you know. I underestimated how tricky the enemy was and overestimated how strong I was because, you know, while I was gone, I wasn't being tested by men, even though I was like, I'm fed up, look where I'm at over a man. But when I came home, that was going to be the test, and I failed that test. And I still beat myself up because I told myself, no, I'm not going to deal with it, but that I fell right into it. I fell into his trap. And do you know that you know, I prayed for this man my whole time. I was gone for 2 years, just prayed for him. Because when I went, he was the only one coming to visit me, and my mom didn't even come to visit me. He was coming to visit me and stuff like that, and he eventually stopped. But I appreciated the little stuff that he did for me. You know what I'm saying? But I prayed for him like almost every single day. And it was just I prayed for him to be saved. I prayed for him to be safe. I just generally cared about him and generally loved him. And so
you know,
when I came home, I was in this, I was like scared to talk to him. But I'm like, well, he's the only man that stuck around. So maybe, you know, and I fell into it and ended up getting pregnant. And he ended up leaving. And now I can't get rid of these children because I'm a Christian now, and it's like I can't do it. I mean, the last time it felt like my soul was getting taken out of me.
But that's different.
I went to the abortion clinic and told him that and told him that it was too late. I couldn't do it when I could have, because I could not get rid of these kids. I just
But there's other alternatives. But there's other alternatives now. I mean, if it's really when you see and you pray about it and you think that it's something that you can't handle, and we're going to have to end this soon because we're running out of time. But if you know that you can't do it, then there's other alternatives. There's foster care for a little while. There's there's other things that you can do, consider. But because abortion is not an option. We know that. But there's foster care. There's other programs, and we can find them for you. Like I said, to make sure that you have the help that you need where they're concerned. But again, you have to understand that there's no obligation there because he came to see you when you were away. You know, sometimes they do all of that to appease you and things because you're not accessible. He can leave you after he's BS'd you a while. No, it'll be a free piece when you get out. Then he'll go home and you don't know what he's doing because you're incarcerated and he's out there doing his thing. So in the same breath, you say you prayed for this man the whole time. I think so many of us women nowadays, especially those of us who are deep in our faith, we pray and we thank God for these men and things, but sometimes we have to realize that it's not necessarily God that's put these people in our lives, and we're thanking God for something that God didn't even send to us, but because of our own personal needs and wants, it's not really a need as much as it is a want, we tend to appreciate things that God didn't mean for us to be in our past anyway, because we allow our own whether it be we need to have our own insecurities fed or whatever it is, we allow it in and then we try to make pretend or convince ourselves that God did it, when really God had nothing to do with it. It's something totally different. So, at this point, I think that you should download this, this particular show, and listen to it and listen to it again, because it's a little bit different when you're on the outside listening to yourself talk. And I think that you'll get a clearer game plan for how you want to handle your life from that point on. And we'll talk about it, when you get a chance to listen, like tomorrow sometime, I'll give you a call. But we're running out of time here. It's going to cut off at 2 hours. But, I think that this is good across the board, because you have your good friend here with you. I heard enough, and I heard even more now. So each one of us gets a better understanding of where we need to go and where, we're going to try to help you go and try to keep you on the straight and narrow, where you're not looking for that validation for love. You're looking for someone to enhance who you are and what you're trying to grow together. Mm-hmm. So that's where we are now. And I think that once you hear your own story being told back to you, it'll give you a clearer understanding and put things in a better perspective for you and say, wow, sitting on the outside listening to this, you could probably yell at yourself and say, why would you do that? You can do this and that, because now you'll become the person on the outside. So when I call you, you can let me know once you hear it, and then just email me or shoot me a message to tell me what you thought about hearing your own story coming back to you like you were someone else, and then you'll be able to go further from there. So with that said, ladies, we are running out of time. So once again, I think this has been a great, great show, and I look forward to next week. This is really, it's really coming along, and I think that each day we are getting so much better, too, healing through that hurt. And, I couldn't ask for anything better, and I still do think that, God said that this is our time, so we're going to make it so. And I will see you all, this coming Saturday, 11 p.m. Eastern Time. As always, I believe your cousin, Liz, in the chat room. And I thank you all so much, and I will talk to you all. And, of course, if you need me for any reason, how to reach me, just say shoot me a message, or you have any more topics, you know how to get in touch. But next week, 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, as always, Autumn, I'll talk to you to end out our show after we close. Rebecca, see you next week. And ladies, have a great Sunday, and I'll see you next week.
Alrighty.
Okey doke. Okay, Autumn, as always, I'll call you in a bit.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.